Today is Friday, February 20th. This is Life, the Universe, and Everything. The panel is LDS and Science Fiction Fantasy.
Original panelists arrive. Keep you entertained.
You can't do that just by standing.
For the love of all things funny, don't try to tell a joke. Who's on this panel besides you, Nick? And Mike?
Jessica?
Oh! Ladies and gentlemen, your panelists have arrived. You are spared. Over here, don't forget that we've heard everything you have to say.
Well, so?
We will not be taking comments from that part of the room, so if you have questions, you're going to need to go over.
Charlie was running behind on moderator, so I said that if I ever got on one where there wasn't one, I would moderate, but anyone here been told that they're moderator?
Brandon, no. You are definitely the moderator.
Am I? Okay.
Responses the panel has to this interesting question.
Alright. Hi, good morning. Hope everyone is awake and had their coffee already. I'm just kidding. We're doing this. Yes, hopefully everyone had their Diet Coke for breakfast. Mix with orange juice, of course. Oh yeah, Diet Caffeine Free Cook, my bad. I'm very happy to be here. My name is James, and this is my next book coming out, which is actually out kind of today.
It doesn't work. Happy launch day.
Because they gave the BYU bookstore books early. It doesn't come out until next week. But it's book two of the 13th Reality series, and I also have a book called The Maze Runner coming out this fall.
I'm Jessica Day George. This is my new book, Princess of the Midnight Ball, about which I am super, super excited. And everyone bought a copy, it's really great. I write mostly YA, middle grade fantasy. I have soon to be soon to be a complete trilogy of dragon books. Dragon Slippers, Dragon Flight, and Dragon Spear will be out in May, and here's the Hickmans. And Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow, and Princess of the Midnight Ball are my two YA books, and they are both retold fairy tales.
Thank you for finally joining us.
You're welcome.
You're a whole 3 minutes late.
We have complications.
We're doing introductions.
Oh, it is my turn. Oh, good.
Great. You'll be the only ones who don't know who everyone is. I'm Tracy Hickman. I've written some books. And this is Laura Hickman, and she's inspired many books and written books. Would you care to say anything to the studio?
Okay. And I'm Brandon Sanderson, impromptu moderator for this panel. What about me? I teach BYU, I write epic fantasy, and middle grade fantasy. The bookstore was sold out of my books until I brought them some more right now. So, they now actually have copies of my books, so you can go check them out. And maybe they got some. So.
You know, that is the classic thing about authors.
Yeah.
We go into the bookstore, and if they have our book on the shelf, we wonder why it isn't selling. And if it's not on the shelf, we wonder why they don't have one. So we're all basically insecure.
All right, so this is LDS Science Fiction and Fantasy Press. That's what this is. Yeah, so hopefully we're all LDS. I think we are. So.
I think there was somebody on this panel last year.
Oh, that's right, there was. Yeah. Alright, so. The description of the panel is being LDS and writing SF and F can be difficult. Many people believe you can't be both. How does being LDS help you write science fiction fantasy? So, I'm gonna kind of split that into our first two questions. How does being LDS make it more difficult to write? Or does it? Are there issues? You know, what about being LDS makes it more challenging? I'm going to make James go first.
Well, I had the experience of thinking about this when I was writing my book, The Maze Runner, because it's a young adult book. This is middle grade, and The Maze Runner is for an older audience. It's a lot darker, a lot scarier, and I consciously kept thinking throughout, okay, I know that all my fans of this book and, you know, so many people know I'm LDS, blah, blah, blah. I just felt this pressure to make sure I didn't put anything too naughty in that book. Sometimes my instinct would be to write, you know, maybe a swear word or something. You know, not one of the major ones, but one of the minor ones. Maybe Bible swear words. And I actually did have a few of those in there, but in the end, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I took them all out. I didn't feel like they added the story that much anyway. Because I didn't want, you know, some sweet little 10-year-old boy in Pleasant Grove, Utah, opening up my book, The Maze Runner, and knowing that I'm LDS and just being devastated. I remember one time when I was the assistant scout leader. How's that for it? Switch of conversation. I had taken all these little boys, and I was brand new at it. And we stopped by the gas station on the way home, and I bought a Mountain Dew. And I will never forget the look that came over this one kid's face. He just looked at me like I had just murdered somebody. And I realized that perception is reality. If this kid thinks Mountain Dew is evil, I probably should not have bought one right in front of him. And kind of the same way, so that did influence me a little bit with The Maze Runner, but it still is very scary and creepy, so I didn't hold anything back in terms of that. So the moral is, if you're a Mormon, you can kill people and be very violent, but you should not say hell.
That is so true. I just read an LDS fiction. It shall remain nameless, but it was published by Covenant. But there was so much violence in this book, but nobody swore. They said things like,
what a wench, and stuff like that. You know, as they blow someone's head off, what a wench. So, and I kind of feel the same as James, because I don't have much of a conscience, to be perfectly honest, when I write. I kill people willy-nilly. I would just swear up a storm but I know that if my editor would love me much more. But but then I think too, like, oh, you know, people that know I'm LDS are going to read this book, and so is my mom, and I kind of feel like I'm being watched a little bit, but I don't think it otherwise affects my writing, because since I write YA anyway, my editor won't let me swear or have sex, so. Well,
she just had a baby.
Way early in the morning. And I haven't had my caffeine-free Diet Coke.
Alright, I have a lot of voice, so I'll just talk without my phone. What James and Jessica are getting at feel a little bit.
Jessica?
I said Jessica.
I'm pretty sure you said Jessica.
I said Jessica, but it was reverberation.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I've heard that one.
Yeah. These things, like, I don't know. None of this actually stops me. I looked at, I don't know, what they've been talking about. These are kind of trappings. I think my faith affects me deeply and profoundly when I write, but it doesn't have anything to do with whether I swear or not, or the content I include. It does be more influence who I am, which then in turn makes me feel like I should be writing moral fiction. As has been expressed by David Farland, he talks about this a lot, the concept that there are consequences. I believe moral fiction is fiction that shows consequences. It's something I do. I don't think that's because I'm sitting here thinking, well, as an LDS writer, I have to show consequences. It's because who I am as a person makes me show consequences. I do not, and we'll take questions after we'll, like, do a question to the panel for me, and then maybe we'll take some questions and then do another one for me. So wait for everybody to answer the original question. But I really felt no hindrances being LDS. Now, I do get emails. Why do you put this in? Or I have my little sister. I love to tell the story. I gave her a copy of Mistborn, the second Mistborn book, to read in manuscript form. And she took a black marker and marked out all the swear words and wrote in her own substitutions for me, which were always
fetch.
Yeah, stuff like that. Or just really extravagant. Oh, you poo-poo doggy head. You know, stuff like this. She was 16, 17 at the time, so she knew what she was doing. She just thought it would be funny. But, you know, I do get these questions. I've not made a habit of letting my audience dictate my content. I try to write stuff that I would love to read, and I just write that way. And so, for better or for worse, that's how I do it. Now, when I swear, I'm saying damn and hell. That's it. I mean, why? That's you know, that, I don't know, it's just what comes out in the books. Will I never write any other words? I don't know. It'll depend on the book and what I'm working on.
In St. George, that doesn't actually count.
Yes. Yeah. In Nebraska, where I grew up, and I got out here, and people were like, oh, okay, I won't say the words that my friends all said.
Brandon, so. I'll give you $1,000 if you drop the F-bomb when he makes middle grade.
$1,000? What if my editor cuts it out?
That it doesn't count.
I think my case is slightly different, not that it's any harder per se, because what I write and what I write about is almost exclusively horror, and that pushes it one step beyond science fiction fantasy, because by its very nature, horror deals with topics that seem to be outside the realm of frequently of any religion, to say nothing of LDS specifically. But I also have to say ditto to what Brandon just said. It doesn't change what I write in terms of conscious decisions, but the fact that I have been a member my entire life and think in certain ways automatically directs what I do write and what I don't write. I can certainly write and write about extremely violent and gushy scenes, but that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily advocating that we all go out and do the same sort of thing. And I agree as well that ultimately fiction, in order to be successful, needs to be moral from my standpoint. And I do make an effort to write about and to write stories, storytellers, whose fiction is clearly based on some kind of moral guidelines. There are consequences. You do this and something will happen. And I find that in horror, good horror, the kind that is worth reading and worth talking about, those consequences are inevitable and clearly defined, and the character may or may not choose to take certain actions, but does so essentially knowing what will happen. As far as language goes, I've had the experience of using the word in my horror novel, because I had a character who simply wouldn't say gosh gee or shucky darn or anything else, and it happens on the first page of the novel. And I had a friend who was looking at the manuscript and got that far and set it down, and that was it. Nothing else that could possibly happen in the novel could outweigh the fact that there was one word in there that offended her standards of speech. Not that I use it myself, but that character kind of had to. And it's the only time he does. And perhaps it could be removed, but at the time, it was just the way that character would speak, regardless of what I think and regardless of what I speak. So, after taking far too long, being LDS affects me, affects my writing, affects my choice of people to write about, simply because that's who I am. And there are certain choices I decide not to make. Certain people I will not write about. Certain stories I avoid, not because I am morally offended by them, but because I know I can't do a decent job with them because of who I am and what I think.
Thank you, darling. I have never had any conflict about this at all. I have absolutely no problem writing fantasy and science fiction. It is second nature to me. The question of my religion has never come into it. I believe in the use of parables. Mine are very poor because they take several hundred pages as opposed to a few paragraphs. And the question of language, once in a while you have a character who just insists on saying something that you really wish they wouldn't. And you try to tone them down as best you can and continue on. That is basically it for me. I have no inner conflict or angst about this at all.
Me too. People have asked us if there's any conflict between what we believe and what we write, and no, we write who we are. I think you have to if you're going to be honest about what you write. You know, occasionally I'll get email from members of the LDS Church, and they will say, how can you write this stuff? And my response is, how can I not write this stuff? I mean, if you actually take some time and consider fundamental LDS religion, it is science fiction. And, or it has great elements of science fiction, certainly. I mean, we deal with cosmic things in our faith. Yes, our next novel will be about such a... No, it's... There is no fundamental concept. We write who we are. And it is true that sometimes characters will say things that I would never say. But at the same time, I think as an author, you have to be responsible to your audience. And sometimes you do need to rein them in just a little bit so that their language does not get in the way of the story that they're trying to tell. Oh, and Laura has thought of something.
No, I was just thinking, we once tried to watch an episode of something called Deadwood.
Yes.
And it was, there was so much language in it, I couldn't follow the plot.
Yes.
This is a mistake.
Yeah, it may have been historically accurate, but for our time, it made it impossible to follow because we kept running into language. In what my wife calls my brash youth, I wrote a novel called The Immortals. And as wonderful a book as I still feel The Immortals is, when I first wrote it, I let my characters have free rein with their language. And when I had a chance to come back to it after about 10 years, and taking a look at it, I realized that giving my characters that much free range in their language was actually getting in the way of what I was trying to say. And so when we had the opportunity to do a revision reprint of the novel, I went back in and peddled everybody back just a little bit in terms of their language and their use of language. I absolutely agree. If you've got a character who's from Hell's Kitchen in New York, then you're trying to get him to say gosh. It's just not going to function. Oh, well, actually, not Hell's Kitchen, but from hell, then yeah, okay, I can understand that. So, we write what we believe, and I believe one has to, as an author, be responsible to their audience for that. You can't, but that does not limit you, and I think that was the original question. Does that limit us or make it more difficult? I don't think so. I think it makes it challenging and exciting, because what we write, I'm giving an address on this tomorrow, but what we write changes people. And it affects people's lives. And it's our responsibility as authors to write something that is going to affect them positively, even if we're dealing with dark and difficult subjects. That we believe in these things, whether they are not, whether they are true or not. And that we write what we should be, not necessarily who we are. So, like my wife, we have never seen any conflict or difficulty in being LDS and what we write.
Now, did you have a self-question? When I write middle grade, I edit for content. Certainly do. It's appropriate for the genre. If I'm writing YA, I don't edit for content. And different publishers, different editors have different opinions on what should be, but you will see the F word in YA used in certain books quite frequently. So depending on what your editor is, your genre, your subgenre, these things, YA sometimes isn't edited for content, but middle grade certainly is. And if I'm writing for sixth graders, I write a certain way that, and I write a different way, different ones in my books, different volumes. Elantris, which is my first book, has virtually no swearing in it. It was appropriate for the setting and for who the characters were. We were dealing with nobility. I felt that they were refined people, not just, this is a culture where the nobility were refined. And just didn't use language like that. And I used N-word swear words when they did use swear words. When I got to Mistborn, it was more like something like Michael said. I had characters who'd grown up on the streets. I had very dark society. I had thieves, and they would not use words like that. I had to at least let them say damn and hell. If I didn't let them do that, it would just sound stupid to me. So, but let's go on then to the flip side of this question. This time, I won't make James go first. I'm gonna make Jessica go first, and then we'll go down and come back to James so you can anchor it. Okay? And this question is going to be the kind of flip side. Lots of the very strong Christian denominations have an anti-fantasy bent. If you go to the Bible Belt, generally fantasy selling worse there. If you go online to the very deep conservative Christians, they even don't like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. This stuff is teaching children to be wizards. LDS culture has embraced it. I don't think we have time on this panel to discuss why. LDS people have seen lots of panels on it. People in New York ask about it all the time. My editor says, wow, there sure are a lot of LDS people writing great fantasy. Why is that, Brandon? I don't know. Just buy my next book. I'll be happy. But I ask this fairly frequently by editors or people in the business. So the question then is not why, but is, does being LDS help you write science fiction, fantasy, or in any way? How does it help you? Jessica. Not Jessica.
On that note, though, of people that won't read it because of witchcraft, the first speaking engagement I did after Dragon Slippers was published, I spoke to some group foster home kids, and the one foster mom said that I seemed very nice, but she was not going to let her children in her home read my book because it looked like it would probably teach them about witchcraft because it was fantasy and her religion did not allow that. And she's sitting there with a giant Diet Coke. And I said, well, what religion are you? And she said, I'm what's called a Mormon or LDS. And there are a lot of us here in Utah. And I'm like, I live in South Jordan. I'm the ward newsletter editor. Anyway, and I just wasn't talking, and she was talking to me about, she actually started to teach the first discussion to me a little later, because she really did not believe that I could be LDS and write fantasy. It was kind of funny. But how does it help? I think it helps because I think you have, like, a real, I don't know if it's a sense of wonder or what to call it, a sense of imagination or something like that, but when you are raised on great stories like the Book of Mormon, and Nephi is this amazing hero, and Orson Scott Card totally nailed it last year at this, where he was talking about how we are familiar with the hero's journey, and we are familiar with miracles and reading, to be honest. And so when you sit down to write a book, you're expecting, you know, Nephi could use a bronze bow. What can my hero do that is better than that? You know, because we've already had this standard set for us in our scriptures. And you know, one of my friends says, well, God is an alien. We already believe that. He came from another world and stuff, so he's like, Battlestar Galactica, come on, we're one step ahead of the crowd there. So I really just think that our imagination is fostered by the stories and the scriptures, and I also think that there's a real emphasis on, like, finding your talents and expressing them in our religion, and so, you know, if your talent happens to be for writing fantasy books, when I told my parents that's what I wanted to do, I was a little kid, and they were like, okay. You know, they took me out of school to go meet Orson Scott Card and Rob McKinley when I was like 12 years old, because they're like, okay, let's go, this is your talent, you know. So I was encouraged very much. So I think that's part of it as well.
Okay. That's a good answer.
Well, thank you.
You may have just covered it.
I believe I did.
I believe that who I am, as I said, is where my writing comes from. And being LDS has certainly helped my writing. I think being LDS has taught me to ask questions, which will sound strange to lots of the people who aren't LDS, who are detractors of the church. They'll say, you know, your church teaches the opposite. I felt that it taught me to ask questions. It taught me to try and understand. Simply reading Joseph Smith's story. If you read in Joseph Smith history, there's a beautiful little verse where he says, where he talks about how he felt people should have treated him if they thought he had a false vision. They should have lovingly tried to reclaim him. They should have tried to understand him and been patient with him rather than hating him. I felt that the church taught me to try to understand people who believe differently from me. And I think seeing life through other people's eyes, walking in their shoes, is the soul of writing great fiction, in my opinion. When you can write the viewpoint of someone who believes differently than you and make it feel right, so that someone who believes that way is reading your fiction and says, yes, this person understands, and then, you know, I know that they personally disagree with me, but they wrote a character who agrees with me. When you can do that, then you are writing wonderful fiction. I felt the church taught me to do that. I felt that my faith taught me to ask questions, to understand, to walk in other people's shoes. I
I don't know if I can say more than that. I mean, it taught me to look for consequences, and I think storytelling is about promises and then fulfilling those promises. It's about cause and effect and consequences to actions. I think that makes for great storytelling. And in the end, I think it just was the fact that I was encouraged to read a lot and to read widely and to study what I read very, very critically. And I did that, and I turned into a writer. So here I am.
I think for me, being LDS functions on a kind of structural level, in that through the church and through the things that we believe, we're able to believe literal interpretation, literal events, that things happen precisely the way they are told. And at the same time, believe in the power of metaphor and symbol. And think consciously, or rather think unconsciously, in metaphorical and symbolic terms without having to sit down and say, at this point I need a symbol in my story, so I'm going to put this in and everyone will understand that this really refers to something else. That's the weakest kind of use of symbol and metaphor. But I think because of the very nature of the religion itself, we understand that even literal things can have intense meaning on multiple levels. So that as we tell the stories, we're more readily able to see beyond the actual thing that we're talking about and touch on broader issues, touch on more important, more fundamental trains of thought than just the narrative itself. Now, I'm not disparaging narrative in any way when I say that, but rather this gives the storytelling a kind of depth that it would not otherwise have. There's a difference that I can see when I'm reading other people's horror novels, for example, between those writers that I know have some kind of religious background and those that I know do not. There's a difference in the texture, there's a difference in the depth of what is talked about. And then when I read an LDS writer, not necessarily horror writer, but science fiction fantasy, it's much, much easier to see that multiple things are happening in this story in addition to the very fine storytelling itself.
I remember when I first read The Da Vinci Code. I got the big reveal. Jesus was married to Mary. And I can remember thinking, yeah. And then after I was finishing the book, I thought, yeah, I could have written that. It'd be great to have those sales, and then the lawsuit and more sales. That'd be wonderful. I think sometimes... we think of ourselves as being LDS authors. And I'd rather think of us as authors who are made better by being LDS. I once went into a Deseret book, just once. No, and I do go in from time to time whenever I need like a manual or something. Or once at Christmas, usually. And I went into it, and I was looking at the novels that were on the shelf, and the blurb on one of the novels said, as gripping as a Tom Clancy novel, and yet maintaining the standards of LDS readers. And I can remember thinking at the time, if it's as gripping as a Tom Clancy novel, what does the rest of it matter? People will read it if it's as gripping as a Tom Clancy novel. And I've met Tom Clancy, and he's not that great. I will tell you that story. The fact is that a great novel or a truly well-written novel is a universal thing. We know from Joseph Campbell that the monument, the great hero's journey, is hardwired into all of humanity, and that story speaks to everyone, regardless of whether they're in New Guinea or they're Southern Baptist or in Beijing. That great story speaks to everyone. And my belief is that being LDS adds to that. And so we are not, I prefer to think of us not as LDS authors, but as authors who have the benefit of the LDS perspective.
We're often guests of a convention in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't tell you how often we've had people walk up to us and say, "I know you're Mormon." They say, "We're whatever religion they are. And my mother, my brother, or someone in my family, usually fill in the blank, is angry with me for reading science fiction and participating in this." And we do a lot of comforting when we're in the South. And tell them, are you, the things you're reading good? Are they worthwhile? Do they expand your soul? Are you improving through this? Is it good for you? And I think that's important. Being LDS, we want to move towards perfection. If we in our writing can approach subjects that are too tender, too tough, to actually just come right out and say, but to create in those 400 pages some little argument to convince the heart of someone else to improve, to move forward, to be comforted, it is worth it, those 400 pages. And so I think, yeah, this really helps me, because we have access to more truth in one place than anyone else. And to be able to take a tiny spark of that and place it in a story, and then have someone come up to you and say, "This changed my life because of this." That makes it better. That is why we write.
I don't care what the question was anymore. I was born and raised in Atlanta, and I never met all these psycho people who can't read fantasy books. It's my Falcon sweatshirt. Anyway, I'm just teasing Laura.
Oh, I love Atlanta.
Atlanta's awesome. Anyway, what was the question?
You know, the question is, when are we going to Miss Pity Pat's porch?
What?
When are we going to Miss Pity Pat's porch? It's my favorite restaurant in Atlanta.
We should go.
Okay.
Tonight. Waffle House?
No,
Johnny B. Steakhouse. Anyway.
We'll change recipe later.
Ironically, we started this out by me saying that I consciously try to avoid bad language because I write for young readers, but that is about the gist of how my religion affects my writing. I just write books, and without thinking about it, my LDS background definitely comes through. I did this without even ever thinking about it, but both my Jimmy Fincher series and this series, the main character came from a family that had a mother and a father, and the parents weren't stupid, and the kid was not an orphan, obviously, and the family loved each other. And I don't know if this is good or bad, but probably the highest compliment I ever get in my emails, especially from parents, is, "Thank you for being a little bit different and not having this orphan who has retarded parents who are idiots." Or with retarded parents, yeah. Now, the Maze Runner is very, very different. They're all orphans, and it's really dark and stuff. But I said this yesterday, that the reason my editor, even though it's a very dark book and lots of really terrible, horrible, awful, scary, dangerous things happen to the characters, the reason my editor loved it so much is because the underlying theme is hope, because the people don't give up. And I think that the LDS people, their history shows kind of the same thing.
Okay. Questions from the audience? Anyone got one? Yeah, way in the back there.
I'd like to know you guys' perspective in relating. I know what Scott talked about giving debates about what people like. How do you guys approach people in your religion with your editors and with the audience? And if you could expand on that, it'd be great.
Okay. Audience and interactions with being LDS. I think it's my turn to go first, and we'll go down around like this. The question is, Noel, will you repeat that for us?
Yeah, I might be more here at the same time. Yeah. When I've heard other published editors, writers, Scott and other people, they've been attacked by other panelists, other writers, on panels with LDS, or as you say, readers, you know, because LDS, a lot of prejudice. How do you handle the prejudice, and is there prejudice? Is even prejudice in
your
science fiction community on just Christianity?
Okay.
Generally.
Yeah. How do you handle the prejudice? How do you handle arguments? How do you deal with these things? There was a wonderful, for those of you who are LDS, conference talk this last time about handling critics. I can't remember who gave it right now. Elder Scott? Anyway, handling critics and how the church, I think it was all centered around the Prop 8 discussion, and his counsel on how to handle critics is wonderful. His answer to handling critics was, love them, and you don't always have to answer. Sometimes silence is the best answer because you can't answer without getting into an argument. I, as a person, am a peacemaker. If people come to me, that's just, you know, whatever that personality type is, I've got it. I don't know if it's red, blue, or plaid, or whatever, but somebody comes to me with an argument, my main goal is not to defend myself, it is to make them feel better. That's my first reaction. And so I will go into a discussion where I try to defuse the situation. It's just what I do. I do feel that being an LDS person, that I am, a role model is the wrong example. I do feel that there is something of a calling. I think we all have a calling in our talents. I think one of my callings is to write great stories that people enjoy that maybe make them feel better or that help them experience life. And being LDS also gets the name of the church out there. I grew up in Nebraska where I was the only LDS kid in my school other than my brother. I remember the first time I picked up Dragonlance, reading it and then getting to the back and reading Tracy's bio, which said, just in one line, he plays, likes to play organ at this local Mormon church. Is that what it said? And when I read that, I didn't know Orson Scott Card at that point. I read that and said, these Mormon, they're out there. Great stuff. And I ran to my friends at school and said, look, this book you gave me, it's by one of me. For a little kid growing up in junior high who didn't have any LDS friends, that was a big deal. And I think that we can do that. It's one of the things we can do. Does that mean that I feel like I'm like a role model or anything? No, but I do think that when I put in the backs of my books, he teaches at BYU, people can open that and say, huh, okay, maybe those LDS people aren't all these things I've heard about them. I mean, I've had been thrown into a lot of debates like this now that I've been handed the wheel of time. I get a lot of emails on both sides. People say, oh, you know, I'm glad that an LDS person is taking this up, or, man, you're making me uncomfortable because I'm not LDS and things like this. And I think there's an opportunity there. I look at all of life and all situations as opportunity. And in a little bit of a way, my writing is my response to the critics. I say, read my books. You know, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. Read my books. You can find out who I am and what my values are by reading my books, because that's who I am.
And you make money.
Yeah, and I make a living telling stories. Michael. Okay, thanks. Tracy. Thanks for putting that bio in, by the way.
We go to a lot of conventions, and we last year we were invited to be guests at a convention in Australia. Flew down to Australia and hadn't been there very long before members of the LDS Church came up to us and said, "Hey, we're let's hang together." One of us. And then a few months later, we flew to Florence, Italy, to a convention in Lucca, in Tuscany.
Quit bragging.
And it was really great. But there we were, and members came up to us there. And said, "Wow, how are you, you know, we are together, you and us." And it was wonderful. But in each of those places, both in Italy and in Australia, literally spanning the girth of the globe, we found opportunity to speak about our faith. People wanted to know. People wanted to know what was it about us that made us tell these stories. It is amazing the opportunities that you get and that you can have to bring forward your faith and present what a wonderful life it is. And so occasionally you'll find somebody who will come up to you and will be a problem, but for the most part, like Brandon, our faith teaches us to accept people, or should have. And I was asked in Australia, what prize, because we were talking about the hero's journey, and I was saying, what, and they asked, someone in the back asked me what prize I got from my mission time, my mission experience. And my mission was to Indonesia, was called to be a Christian missionary to the most populous Islamic country in the world. And I was able to tell them, honestly, that the prize that I gained was a deep and abiding love for all mankind. And I carry that with me whenever I meet people.
I got to butt in for just a second. The amazing thing was, he's telling these people, and somebody in the back went, "Yeah." And then a whole bunch of, "Yes." And, it, you know, in that Australian accent, which I can't do. And it sounded like, amen, to what he had said. And the spirit, in a science fiction convention in Australia, went, whoosh. And we all felt it. And then he went back to what he was speaking about. It was just an amazing experience for me.
So, yeah, how do we deal with criticism? We love them. We invite them in. And it works every time.
I can remember a couple of months ago when I went up to Pocatello, Idaho. And I spoke to the children there, and the Mormons came up to me. I can honestly say, all of them. No, I have been as far as Rexburg. No, but, what was the question? I can honestly say that in my writing career, I have never even remotely been persecuted or frowned upon or anything for being a Mormon. My agent is a gay man. and he knew I was a Mormon, and he's the freaking awesomest agent ever. I've forgiven him for being gay. And he's forgiven me for being Mormon. And I don't know if you guys know Sarah Zarr, but she's the one who I was about to say hooked me up with him, but I was she's the one who referred me to him. And she said that he said to her, "Can a gay man be a Mormon guy's agent?" She said, "I think so." It's worked out great, but I've never seen any kind of person. I just really think that's gone away a lot.
I got a lot of emails during the crop date time. I got a lot of emails. Very angry, argumentative, trying to punch me in the face by email.
I got a couple of those, but just from people that I'd worked with at a bookstore in New Jersey.
I have to say, thinking about it, our editor, when we were doing the Bronze Canticles books, had a book club, and they were reading a book on polygamous. And she knew we lived in southern Utah, so she called him and said, "Do you know any polygamous? Have you ever seen any polygamous? Tell me about what you know about." You know, to see what.
Yeah, I go to Walmart every week.
Exactly. And so it was interesting because she interviewed both Tracy and I, so she could go back and do her little book report. I'd spoken to people who had actually seen some, as opposed to what was in their book, just to see if what was in the book was accurate. And I can't speak to the accuracy of the book, but it was a very interesting discussion to speak about polygamy with my Jewish editor. And we had a very close relationship. She was wonderful.
You just reminded me. The Immortals is... The Immortals is essentially a dark future story about what amounts to AIDS concentration camps. And we have a number of fascinating gay characters in this book. I love this book because of where it goes. I have to honestly say I have more trouble with LDS readers than I do with non-LDS. And I've had people ask me, why would I want to write a book about gay people? And that's from inside the LDS community. So I in my own experience, I've had more conflict sometimes with myopic views from inside our culture than I have actually from myopic views outside our culture.
I wish we could go on this topic. We're actually out of time. I do like to, at the end of each panel I run, give an opportunity for pimping if someone wants to, you know, talk about when they're doing a signing or when there's a book release or things like that. James, we've got like 10 seconds each, so if you want to, you can, you don't have to.
BYU Bookstore has this, but not even officially released yet. So being the first to buy it, first secretary, I wrote that book. My signing Saturday at 2 o'clock.
And I'm with him, and we're reading before that, aren't we?
Wait, I'm going to read the first chapter of The Maze Runner at my reading.
It's very good. So, yeah, James and I are reading tomorrow at 1 and 1:30 or something, and then signing at 2, something like that.
I think I have a signing sometime. Yes, I have a signing at noon tomorrow in the bookstore. Come check out my books.
No signing, but I'm always available for one-on-one poetry discussions.
Laura's main address... is when, where, and when? Is it here? In here? This very here. Okay, is it this very here at 11 o'clock, I think? Isn't it? Yes. But it is a secret meeting.
I already told you about it.
Oh, it's a secret meeting that you already know about.
You shouldn't have been late.
Now, please come. We are not allowed to show this movie except to closed groups. So, it's not like you can go find it on the internet, okay? we can only show this to private showing. So come and enjoy the monkey show.
All right, thank you to our panelists.